And we're holding at the bottom of Kuf Dalet Amud Beis, beginning the 13th and last perek of our Masechta. So we're continuing to talk about various issues involving a woman's ksuba, but there's going to be some digressions in our Masechta because there's going to be some digressions in the perek to other topics of Dine Mominus, because our Mishnah is going to introduce us to two Chachamim who have have an opinion about something related to a ksuba, about who have opinions about things related to ksuba as well as other things in Dine Mominus. So the Mishnah says, Shnei Dayanim Gzeiros Hayu B'Yerushalayim. There were two Dayanim of Gzeiros in Yerushalayim, and we're going to see in the Gemara what kind of Gzeiros they dealt with. Their names were Admon V'Chanan Ben Abishalom. One was named Admon, and the other one, the Gemara is going to give us, the Gemara will bring a Braisa that gives his father's name as well. The other one was Chanan Ben Abishalom. In the Gemara, we're actually going to have a different Chanan, which is why the Mishnah over here identifies this Chanan by his father's name. Tosfos, by the way, points out an interesting side thing, that there was a girsa that they had in front of them in some of the manuscripts that they had in front of them that called him Chanan ben Avshalom without the yud. But Tosfos says that wouldn't be right. We know you're not supposed to name somebody after a Russian. So how would this guy's father have been called Avshalom when the Avshalom in Jewish history was a Russia? He rebelled against his father, David. Therefore, Tosfos says that the name must be Avishalom, which is actually a name that we find elsewhere in Tanakh. With that said, though, there is some discussion about that matter of not naming after Rishoyim. One interesting thing you have in that regard is You take the name Menachem. The only Menachem in Tanakh was a king of Yisrael who was a Rosha, and yet, of course, we use the name Menachem very commonly. So there are Mefoshim who find various rationales for why you can use such a name. One of them being that if you're not specifically naming after the person, but rather you're using the name as you're naming because of the content of the name. Avshalom, after all, means the father of peace. Then maybe you'd be allowed to. In any case, the Gersa that we have in front of us, based on Tosfos, is that the man's father's name was Avishalom. Anyway, Chanan Oima Shnei Dvarim. So Chanan, now of these two Dayanim that we're talking about, we don't mean, by the way, that these two Dayanim sat by themselves. Each one had a base din of his own, as we'll see in the Gemara. So Chanan, the head of one of those Bate Dinim, Oima Shnei Dvarim, he said two Dinim in Dinim Mominus, specifically having to do with Ksubas, which the other Chachamim disagreed with. Admon Oima Shiva, and Admon said seven dinim that the other Chachamim disagreed with. And we're going to go through them one by one in the Mishnayos of our Perek, and we're going to deal with Chanan, we're going to deal with Chanan's opinions, and 1 second.
Is the suggestion here that
these Dayanim were against halacha? No, of course not. They weren't against halacha. They have a machlokes in halacha, like you have in every other area of halacha. It so happens that of the various things, now like this, in other words, Chanan, these two, Admon and Chanan, they were the heads of Bate Dinim, which the Gemara is going to tell us those Bate Dinim were meant to deal with specific issues in halacha. They were like Lahavdo, you think of nowadays, like you have think tanks, let's say, that deal with a certain area of public policy or whatever. The Gemara is going to explain that their Bate Dinim were kind of like that. And the point is, they must have passed in thousands of halachas over their career. Of all of those, there's two cases where Chanan said a certain halacha and the Chachamim disagreed with it, and the other Chachamim disagreed with him. No different than the way you have sometimes Rabbi Akiva says a din and the other Chachamim disagreed with him. Doesn't take away anything from Rabbi Akiva, of course. Same thing. And then Admon similarly says seven dinim, which the Chachamim disagreed with. The implication, of course, being that in all the thousands of other halachas that must have come to them over their careers, then the other Chachamim did agree with them. So the Mishnayos of our Perek are going to go through them one by one. We're going to go through each one, what Chanan says and what the other Chachamim disagree with him, and what Admon says and what the other Chachamim disagree with him. We're going to actually have many times where the halacha does end up being like these Dayanim, even though many of the Chachamim of their times were against them. But I'm saying, even if we didn't end up passing the halacha like them, the fact is, you know, we'd still say the very fact that the Mishnah quotes them and gives their view and then gives their view validity shows that it has a certain validity, even if we don't end up passing like them. So the first one is Misha holach lebedina seyam. Suppose that her husband goes overseas. The ishta tevas mezonis. And his wife, who stayed behind, is demanding mezonis. She's saying, my husband didn't leave me enough money or enough supplies in the house for food, and I need Beis Din to step in and sell some of his property in order to give me food. So, Chonon Oimer Tishah. Now, the Gemara is going to discuss later on. We're going to have a whole digression in the Gemara about other matters, in particular about the matter of Dayanim taking a salary and about the whole matter of Shoichad and so forth. We're going to have a whole digression, including a lot of Agada today and tomorrow. And then we're going to end up eventually getting back to our Mishnah. And we're going to discuss a couple of possibilities. One is that eventually we hear a rumor that the husband died overseas. And the question is what we're doing as far as his nechassim. And the other is that we're talking about we haven't heard of any such thing. Anyway, we'll learn about that on Daf Kuf Zayin in 2 days, Bez Hashem. But meanwhile, So Chonon says she's going to have to swear at the end, but not at the beginning. Now, at the end, Rashi explains it means, according to one of the possibilities in the Gemara over there, that we're talking about that the eventually we hear rumors that the husband died. At that point, when she wants to collect her ksuba, she's going to have to swear that all this time when she was collecting mezonis, that she did so truthfully, that she didn't take anything of her husband's, which otherwise would be charged against her ksuba. In other words, exactly that. Like this, for example, she's claiming mezonos. It might happen eventually that we find that it's not so. Her husband, in fact, left her money for mezonos. So why is she having some of his property sold for that purpose? So then we would make her swear at the end, says Chonon, when we hear that her husband died and she comes to Beis Din and says, okay, now that my husband is dead, let me collect my ksuba, then we're going to make her swear that all this time when she was collecting mezonos, that she was doing that truthfully, and that in general, that she hadn't taken anything that would now be charged against her ksuba. But she doesn't have to swear at the beginning when she's collecting mezonos. The Rambam has a different explanation of tishava basof. He says it's talking about if the husband comes back and contradicts her and says, what are you talking about? I did leave you food for mezonos. I did leave you money or food or resources or whatever for mezonos. At that point, we would make her swear that she had claimed it truthfully. Anyway, that's Chonon. Continues the Mishnah. But on the other hand, the sons of the Kohenim Gdolim disagreed with Chonon. We're talking about, the Gemara is going to tell us, these Dayanim were in Yerushalayim. This is what we're talking about before the second Beis HaMikdash, before when the second Beis HaMikdash was still standing. So you had a group of people of former Kohenim Gdolim and their sons. They were apparently distinguished coming to Chachamim as well. Again, enough for the Mishnah to record their opinion as a valid opinion in Halacha. So they said, no, she would have to swear at the beginning when she first comes to collect mezonos, as well as at the end when we find out that her husband died or when her husband comes back and contradicts what she said. And in fact, Rab Dosa ben Hokinas, who lived around that time also, agrees with the Bnei Kohenim Gdolim that the woman would have to swear twice. On the other hand, Omer Rabbi Yechiman Zakkai, Yofa Omer Chonon. On the other hand, Rabbi Yechiman Zakkai says, Chonon said very, very, very properly, very correctly, Loiti Shava Ela Basayf. She should only have to swear at the end. And again, when we get to on Daf Kuf Zayin, which we'll learn over Shabbos, Bez Hashem, we'll talk about the ins and outs of what exactly the Machloikas is over here and why Chonon and Rabbi Yechiman Zakkai hold one way and Bnei Kohenim Gdolim and Rabbi Dosa ben Hokinas hold the other way. So we'll get into that in a couple of daffin messages. So the Gemara asks, Uraminu, I have a contradiction. You're telling me in the Mishnah that there were two Dayonig Zeris in Yerushalayim, but a Braisa says, Shlosha Dayonig Zeilois Hoyub Yerushalayim. There were three Dayonim of Zeilois in Yerushalayim. Now, Zeilois and Zeilois are two different words. Zeris means edicts or decrees. Zeilois means thefts. So with three Dayonic Zelos in Yerushalayim, Admen ben Gadoi, V'chonon ha-Mitzri, V'chonon ben Avishalem. Kashet Tlas Atrein. So the Braisa seems to be contradicting the Mishnah in two ways. Number one, the Braisa is saying there were three Dayonic, there were three of these Dayonim. The Mishnah is mentioning only two. Zelos means robberies. Zelos means robberies. Zeirois, like a Zeira, means an edict or a decree or something. So kashik zeirais so kashik tlasa train. So the Braisa is saying there were three of them. The Mishnah is saying there were only two of them. And kashik zeilis and kashik zeirais akzeilis. And there's a contradiction. Our Mishnah says that they were dayonik zeirois, and the Braisa calls them dayonik zeilois with a lamed. Now, Tosfos says it isn't doesn't one thing answer the other because they were different. Precisely because there were different sets of dayanim. There was one set for gzeilos and one for gzeiros. One was three, one was two. What's the problem? Tosfos says can't. In Yerushalayim at that time, there were many great Tamar Chachamim. The Gemara is going to go on to say there were hundreds of Bate Dinim in the city. They wouldn't have to have. We have Admon appears on both. We have Admon and Chanan ben Avishalom appear on both lists. They appear in the Braisa as well as in the Mishnah. You're not going to say that there were so few qualified people to sit on these Bate Dinim that they had to have Admon and Chanan do two jobs. They had to have them be Dayonik Zay Lois as well as Dayonik Zay Rois. So obviously we're talking about the same Beis Din, we're just calling it a different name, or the same Bate Dinim, we're just calling them a different name. But the question would be then why the Braisa is mentioning a third one, Chonan HaMitzri, where our Mishnah is not mentioning them, and also why is the title for them different? But Tosfos says it obviously can't be that each of them had to have two jobs because there were many other great Tamar Chachamim in Yerushalayim at that time who could have filled, if in fact they needed separate Bate Dinim for Gzei Rois and for Gzei Lois, they would have had plenty of qualified Tamar Chachamim for that purpose. So the Gemara says, "Bishlema tlas atrein laikasha." Now, when it comes to the 3 versus 2, there's no big question in it, because dechoshiv laikatani, dechoshiv laikatani. The Mishnah may be listing when it says only two; it may be listing only the ones that are choshiv lay. So Tosfos discusses two possibilities of what that means. It could mean that the two mentioned in our Mishnah were more important. So Chonan HaMitzri, in other words, the Tana of our Mishnah would agree that Chonan HaMitzri lived at that time and was the head of such a Beis Din. However, he wasn't as important as Admon and Chonan ben Avishalom, and therefore our Mishnah left him out. That's one possibility, Tosfos says. The other possibility, Tosfos says, is that Dechoshiv Lay just means the ones that the Mishnah needed to list in order to tell us about their opinions in Halacha. Chonan HaMitzri, sure, he was the head of such a Beis Din in Yerushalayim as well. However, we don't find any dinim where he said one thing and the Chachamim of his times disagreed with him. Therefore, our Mishnah had no need to mention it. So the word Choshiv Lay again can mean either that the ones in our Mishnah were more important, or it can mean that these are the ones that the Mishnah needed to list, whereas it didn't need to list the other. It didn't need to list the third one, Chonan HaMitzri, because we don't have anything that he said where the other Chachamim said different. And Tosfos goes into some discussion about that, among other things. Do we necessarily list Chachamim when we have a list of Chachamim? Are they always necessarily listed in honor of importance? Tosfos says that not necessarily. We see in the Haggadah when we have the story of the 5 Chachamim, and we list Rabbi Akiva, and we list Rabbi Akiva at near the end of the list over there, even though Rabbi Akiva was much more important than many of the other Chachamim there. So not always when you have a list of Chachamim, not always are they listed in order of importance. Anyway, so the 3 versus 2 is no problem. The Tana of our Mishnah would agree that Chonan HaMitzri lived at that time and was one of the Dayonim of these special Bate Dinim in Yerushalayim. But you're still left with the Kasha. Why is our Mishnah calling them Dayonei Gzei Rois, that they're in charge of edicts or decrees, whereas the Braisa calls them Dayonei Gzei Lois, that they're in charge of things involving robberies? So the Gemara answers, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok Shoyu Goyzim Gzei Rois Al Gzei Lois. It means they were both. They were in charge of decrees, of edicts in Halacha regarding Gzeilus, regarding cases of robbery. In other words, that was these Bate Dinim, besides they had the regular Bate Dinim that dealt with other cases, these were, like I said before, like think tanks almost, Lahavdil, their job was, they were specialty Bate Dinim for certain kinds of things. Kitanya, for example, we learn in a Braisa an example of one of the things that they decided. Kitma Natiya. Suppose that one person's animal goes into another one's garden and breaks a young tree over there. So now you have to pay nezek for it. How much do you pay? So Rabbi Yossi Omer goes with Xeris, Shabbi Yishlaim Omerim. So Rabbi Yossi says that these goes with Xeris, the ones that we're talking about, the Mishnah and the Braisa, they said, Netia bas shnasa shtei kesef. If the young tree is in its first year, then the owner of the animal has to pay 2 silver coins for it. Bas shtei shanim arba kesef. And if the young tree is 2 years old, then he has to pay 4 silver coins. In other words, the point is, it would be very difficult at that stage of a tree's life to assess how much the tree is actually worth. So therefore, these Dayan Exeris thought it over, and they and their Bate Dinim, and they decided to establish a fixed amount that the guy is going to have to pay, regardless of you could start assessing the actual value of the young tree, but instead they established a fixed amount. One point is Mefoshim say they did that also Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. We want to promote the growth and the prosperity of Eretz Yisrael, and you're only going to have that if you have young trees that are eventually able to grow into mature trees, and therefore that's why they set up these amounts. Beyond that, already the tree is mature enough that you can figure it out in the ordinary, that you can figure out its value in the ordinary way. Okay, so that was their job. So we see, by the way, that Xelois doesn't necessarily mean robberies, as in when one person goes and grabs something from the other by force. It means cases like this of Dinim Mominus. So they were in charge. They were based in these were Bate Dinim that was specially set up for Dinim Mominus, or for certain cases of Dinim Mominus. So the Gemara still says, or Rimini, I have another Braisa that says, Shloisha Dayan Exeris Hayub Yerushalayim. Another Braisa says there were 3 Dayan Exeris in Yerushalayim, and the list is different. Admon v'chonon v'nochum. So this other Braisa says that the third one was not Chonon Amitzri like in the previous Braisa, but rather Nochum. So the answer is, Amar Papa, Man Tana Nochum, Rab Nosim. You should know which Tana is it that says that the third one was Nochum. That is Rab Nosson, the Tanya Rab Nosson. Af Nochum Amodi be goes with Xeris should be a Shlaim Haya. Rab Nosson says that Nochum Amodi was also one of these Dayonit, was also one of these goes with Xeris in your Shlaim. V'loi hodu lo Chachamim. The Chachamim disagreed with him and said that Nochum Amodi was not in that position. Now, Nochum Amodi definitely lived at that time. You have a Mishnah in Nazir that mentions him speaking to some Nazirim right after the Churban. So he definitely lived at that time. But the other Chacham disagree, and they say he wasn't the head of one of these Bate Dinim of Dayan Exeris.
He came from wood.
He came from Modai, same way as Chonon HaMitzri came from Mitzrayim. The same way Nochum Amodi came from Modai, as in Poras HaModai, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara asked for 2 leka. Are you telling me there were no other Bate Dinim in Yerushalayim? At this point, the Gemara is assuming that these goes with Zeris. Right now, the Gemara doesn't realize yet that these were Bate Dinim specially for this purpose, like we said before. The Gemara thinks that these are regular Bate Dinim that sat and dealt with all kinds of cases of Dinim Mominus and Isser V'Heter and so forth. And punked it happens that they also made these Zeris. So the Gemara asks, "V'tulekar? Are there no other ones?" V'ha'amar Pinchas Amar Boshia Shloish Meis V'Tishim V'Arba Bate Dinim Hayu Yerushalayim. Before the Churban, there were 394 Bate Dinim in Yerushalayim. Keep in mind, each of those Bate Dinim had, Rashi says, 23 members. Now you have to remember, you have to think of the caliber of people who can serve on a Beis Din. So imagine you had then. It means then that just on the Bate Dinim alone, you had 12,000, almost 12,000 Talmid Chachamim of great caliber in Yerushalayim in the time before the Churban. Or connect on Bate Knesias, and Rav Pinchas continues, there were an equal number of shuls in Yerushalayim before the Churban. Or connect on Bate Medrashis, there were an equal number of Bate Medrash, where the adults would learn Torah in Yerushalayim before the Churban. Or connect on Bate Sofrim, and there were an equal number of Chadarim in Yerushalayim. So you had a huge number of, and each of these places, the Bate Medrash also had great Talmid Chachamim who learned there. The schools also had Talmid Chacham who were teaching the kids. So you had a huge number, but even just Bate Dinim alone was saying there were 394. So what are you telling me that there's only these Bate Dinim headed by these few Chachamim? The answer is Dayon and Tuva Habu. Sure, there were lots of Dayonim in Yerushalayim. V'chi Kamrinan, a Gozer Xeris Kamrinan. But we're focusing specifically on the Gozer Xeris, the ones whose job was to think about these things, to learn, to specialize in these areas of Torah, and to make appropriate Xeris about them. Those, there were only these three or four Bate Dinim in Yerushalayim that specialized in that kind of thing. Okay. So now let's talk about how they paid them. The Gemara says, "Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Asi, goes with Xeris Shvir Shalayim, how you noitlan schorem, tishim, batesha, mona, mitrumas alishka." these goyes v'gzeiros that we're talking about in Yerushalayim, they would get an annual salary every year from the Trumas HaLishka. So these goyes v'gzeiros, now we have, they were in Yerushalayim before the Churban, there was the Trumas HaLishka. Every year, everybody's giving machzah shekel. They would put it in a chamber of the Beis HaMikdash, and they would take out money during the year at different times to buy the korbanos for the Beis HaMikdash and to pay for the different operating expenses of the Beis HaMikdash. So now, we're saying that these goyes v'gzeiros would get a salary of tishim b'teisha mana mitrumas alishka. They would get a salary of 99 mana every year from the trumas alishka. It means, in other words, it wasn't just for the three dayanim themselves. We're saying these three dayanim, each of them was the head of a beis din of 23. So they would divide the. In fact, Mefoshim say, why 99? Why not 100? He says because that way they could divide it evenly among the three batadinim. But then Marashah goes on to say that then they would divide that in turn among the 23 members of the beis din. So it would come. So that would cover their expenses for the year. Loy rotsu, and if they didn't want, which sounds like it means if they didn't want that, they want a raise. Moisif and lahem, then they would add more. They would give them a raise. The Gemara says, what do you mean loy rotsu? What do you mean they didn't want? Alter barashi yaskin. Are we talking about rishoyim where they're saying that I'm not getting enough? I want more money, even though they don't actually need it for their expenses. Ella, no. What it means is lois sofu. If that amount of money that they're receiving is not enough, because let's say prices have gone up, or because let's say the Chassam Sofer says, let's say their families are larger. Af apishalei rotsu, even if they don't want to take a raise, now they're dayanei gzeiros. Remember, you know, one of the qualifications that a dayan on a beis din should have is sonei botza, which Rashi says they don't even care for their own money, let alone they're certainly not going to take money from other people. So you could well have that these dayanim are saying, you know what, why should I have to get a raise? Why should I have to take more from the tzibur? We'll manage, we'll swimp, we'll economize or whatever in our house. Nevertheless, Mosipin Alehan, nevertheless, the Braise is saying you don't do that, or not the Braise, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav Asi is saying that nevertheless they do give them a raise. We don't accept this argument, we don't want to be matriach on the tzibur, we give them a raise if necessary. Tosfos, by the way, deals with the question that how are you allowed, now further on in the Gemara, we're going to talk about over here about the matter of shoychad. So fine, here it's not shoychad because they're receiving from the tzibur. Shoychad, bribery, would be only a problem if they're receiving from the Baalei Din. But still, the question is that a Talmid Chacham is not supposed to take money from the tzibur in order to teach Torah. Isn't that what they're doing over here? So Tosfos discusses that over here and says that no, what it is these people, they're constantly sitting on Dinei Torah. That's their job. Right? Like I said before, you have like the Lahavdo, you have these Goyish think tanks where their job is to sit and research and think about certain matters of public policy. In effect, that was the job of these Batei Dinim. They were full-time occupied in researching these areas of halacha. So therefore, they had no other income. So therefore, the tzibur has to support them.
So
in other words, the idea is this is something where the tzibur needs such people, and therefore they're performing a service for the tzibur, just like anybody else who's performing a service for the tzibur. In fact, there's an interesting thing in that regard. The Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah speaks very sharply against the Talmid Chachamim who take money from the tzibur to learn Torah. So he says that they're causing a chilul Hashem, and he has all kinds of other negative things to say about them. And yet the Kesef Mishnah points out Lamaisa, we seem to see not like that. We see it in all the generations. You had Kolalim where they give the younger light as a stipend and they sit and learn. So it seems like the Velt doesn't hold like the Rambam. But even the Rambam knows of this Gemara over here. So the answer would be that Rambam might make an exception for somebody like this, where they're doing a service for the tzibur, where otherwise the tzibur would have you need these dayanei gzeiros to be dealing with these kinds of cases, and therefore he would agree that they can be taking a salary from the tzibur, as in fact they did.
Malamdim also, they babysit the kids, they watch.
Malamdim is something else, right? There it's really the parents paying them, but there is the idea there, yeah, the Malamdim are not just teaching them Torah, they're also watching them and so forth, so yeah, that's something else. Yeah. Okay, so now the Gemara gets into this matter of Dayanim taking a schar for judging Dinei Torah. The Gemara says, Kauna. And that was his name, Kauna. He was an Amora in the times of Shmuel, in the times of Rav and Shmuel. have a shokel istira mizakai veistira mechayev. He would collect as his fee an istira, which Rashi says is a sela, from the innocent party and one from the guilty party. So in a din Torah, in other words, he would collect the money from each one. The doin lo dina, and he would judge their din Torah. So he asks, "Heichu abin hochi? How could Kauna do that?" Doesn't the pasuk say you're not allowed to take bribes? Now you might answer that that's only where he doesn't take from both of them, where he takes from only one. You could say the problem is duma osilat sluya dinah, because then he may incline the judgment in favor of that one person. And you could say counter kivin to shokum utavayu like osilat sluya dinah, and you might say counter is collecting equally from both, so therefore there's no problem of inclining in one direction. There's no problem of him showing favoritism to one or the other. But if you're going to say that, the chiloy osilat sluya dinah mishori, so what? Even if he's taking from both, and even if he's not going to, even if that's not going to cause him to judge unfairly, is such a thing mutter anyway? Well, Tanya, we learn in a brisa. Why does the pasuk need to tell us the din that a dayan is not allowed to take a bribe? If the pasuk is telling us on the surface, don't take a bribe in order to pervert justice, in order to declare the guilty party innocent or vice versa, you don't need that. You have a different pasuk that says, don't pervert justice. So automatically, then that would include this. So you wouldn't need a separate mitzvah for this. Ella, what it means is, even if it's in order to declare the person who anyway objectively would be innocent to declare him innocent, or the one who objectively would be guilty to declare him guilty, and still the Torah says, don't take a bribe. So how is Kauna allowed to do what he's doing? There is incidentally an interesting point that everybody brings in this connection from the Chazan Ish. He writes in one of his Sfarim on Hashkafa, he says, now you think of it, for example, a Dayan is allowed to paskin a din for himself. We don't say that he's partial to himself and therefore he's likely to judge wrongly in order to save his own food or whatever. And yet over here we're saying, so what would be the problem over here? And he says the vote is once the Torah has asked Shoichad, then in effect it makes Hashem has informed us there's a certain special Yetzahara involved. As soon as there's shoychad involved, then even though you might say he's taken from both sides, so we're back to square one. Nevertheless, it's still going to have an effect on his thought processes, and he's going to end up perverting the din. He's going to end up thinking more in favor of one or more in favor of the other.
They both give the same thing.
Even if they both give the same thing, the very fact that he accepted shoychad, this goes back to also, by the way, when we talked about a couple of times in Or Masechta about shudda de daini. And we said over there that the Yerushalmi calls it Shuchta the Daini. So that's why Tosfos in Baba Basra that we mentioned then says actually very strongly, it doesn't mean that the Dayan is allowed to accept Shoichad in order to judge the case. Because based on our Gemara, even if there's no problem, even if in a case like that, the Dayan has full discretion to decide the Din however he wants, nevertheless, a Dayan has no business taking Shoichad. We said there that the Korban Eidah, one of the Mefarshim on the Yerushalmi, explains differently, but yeah.
It means different.
He explained differently. He said that it meant that he actually could, but yeah. Anyway, so
from two people.
So even if he's taking from both people, yeah. So the question is how Kauna was doing what he's doing. The answer is Hani Mili Heichad the Shokel B'Toras Shoichad. That would be where he's taking it as a bribe. Where, for example, Rashi says, the person says, the person says when he's giving him the money, if in fact objectively Alpi Alocha, I don't have to pay, then don't judge against me. Then decide in my favor, given that the halacha should be like me anyway. But he's still calling it shoychad. He's still saying that it's for the purpose that you should judge me a certain way. Kauna, Torah's Agra, have a shokel, whereas Kauna is getting it as a salary, meaning that she says, Schar Torah, he has the tircha that he's doing to judge them. But the question then becomes, Torah's Agra Mishori, even as a salary, even as payment for his tircha, how is such a thing allowed? Vatnan, we learn in a Mishnah, if a dayan takes a salary in order to judge dinei Torah, din of betelim, then his dinim are bottle. And the Rashba says on that, when we say din of betelim, we don't just mean the individual din where we know he took money for it. We mean from now on, every din, even retroactively, that he's judged, we have to be suspicious of, unless we know that for this particular one, he didn't take a salary. So we're back now. So this is where Tosfos says, it's one thing the dayanik zeiros, we said, again, we said it was their full-time job. But the Gemara is assuming that Kauna, for Kauna, it wasn't a full-time thing. As the Gemara is going to say, he had a different job. So that being the case, then how was he allowed to take money to judge a din Torah? So the answer is Hanimili Agodina. That would be where he's getting a payment for the din. In other words, he's telling him, I'm not giving you a psak din unless you pay me X amount. Kauna, Agapatela, have a shakil, whereas Kauna is only getting paid for the time that he's taking off work to judge their din Torah. So that would be allowed.
I think before he even starts the din. You know,
right. Right. But the point is he's doing it as Agapatela. But still, the Gemara says, but Agapatela Mishari still is even such a thing, Mutter. Vahatanya, we learn in another Braisa, Mukhur Hadayan Shinoto Schar Lodrun, a Dayan who takes money to judge a din Torah is ugly. Elosh dino din, but b'dieved, if he did, his din is a valid din Torah. So we have to ask Hechidami, what kind of pay is he getting? Ilema agodina, if you're telling me that he gets a payment, that, like we said before, he's saying, I won't judge the din Torah unless you pay me. So what do you mean dino din? What do you mean b'dieved, his din is a valid din Torah? V'altanya al-nirtel schar lodun din of Kalim. We just quoted from the Mishnah in Bechodes that says that if a person does that, his din is a bottle. So it can't mean that. Ella aga b'tela. Evidently, the Bryce has to be talking about where he's only getting schar batala, he's only getting paid for the time that he otherwise could have been doing other work. V'katani mechor adayin. And still, the Bryce is saying it's still an ugly thing to do. So again, Kauna being a distinguished amora is not going to do something ugly like that. So how is he taking any money from the Balei Din? And the answer is, and by the way, the Bar Tanura on that Mishnah in Bechoras has a very sharp thing. Usually the Bar Tanura just, you know, he gives the facts and explains the Mishnah. There he editorializes and he says, I've seen a terrible thing, he says, by the Rabbanim of Ashkenaz of Germany, where they charge very high fees for being Masader a get and being Masader a ksuba and so forth. And he says, you know, you think of it, they're almost like they have a monopoly. They're the only Rav in town. If they don't do it, it's not like the people can go to a different Rav or a different Beis Din easily to arrange the ksuba or get. So what business do they have taking money and especially taking such high amounts? And he says, I would say that even the gittim such rabbonim arrange apostle, and he goes on a whole rant about it. So yeah, it's serious stuff. Yeah. Anyway, so again, the question is on Kauna. It can't be that he's taking shoychad in the sense that a person is coming and telling him, I'm going to give you money. We're each going to give you money. And that way, whichever of us is in the right, you're actually going to judge us fairly, because that would be shoychad. It can't be that he's taking a schar to judge din Torah. I won't give you the din Torah unless you pay me, because we said then din of b'talim. It can't be schar batola, because then it's mechor. So how is he getting money? Mechor means ugly. It's an ugly thing to do. So the answer is, hani mili b'tela d'loy mocha. The answer is, when the Braisa is saying, this last Braisa that we quoted, and saying it's an ugly thing for a Dayan to do, that would mean a batola that's not obvious. So let's say, for example, yes, during this time he could have been doing other work, but it's not so obvious that he's actually taking time off work right now in order to judge their din Torah. Yes, in principle, he could have been doing some other work during that time, but we don't necessarily see that there's something specific that he would have been doing during that time. No, but let's say, but not necessarily. Let's say, for example, so he's doing it like in his spare time or something. So yes, in theory, he could have been using that spare time to earn something else, but in practice, we don't see it's not something obvious. Kauna b'tela d'mukha haba. In the case of Kauna, it was a very obvious, clear thing to have a tohi, have a shokel is what he would take. To have a tohi ba'amber d'chamra, because Kauna's day job was he would sniff in a wine cellar. Kauna had a very good sense of smell. Now, people have wine cellars, they have barrels of wine. Now, you always have the problem that the barrel may go sour, the wine may go sour, and then you've lost your investment. Kauna had a very sharp sense of smell, so he would be able to sniff the wine and be able to tell which ones are closer to starting to go bad, and then the guy would know to sell those barrels sooner, and then the other ones, he would say, those ones can last a while. So v'yave l'zuza, and they'd pay him a zuz for his services. So therefore, when he's taking time off that, when he's in the middle of such a job and they ask him, judge us a din Torah, then he's entitled to take money from them, because then it's clear that he's taking time off his work in order to judge their din Torah.
Hopefully, the walk to the judge, to the place we had to judge, was quite a little walk to be able to air out all that the stuff he smelled. They're going to go now to clean the barrels out now. They get to come out all.
They come out all shaker, I guess. And the Gemara gives an example. Ki hod Rav Huna. We have a similar example with Rav Huna. Ki hava osa din la kamei. When people would come to him for a din Torah, Amalahu, you tell them, how hovoli gavra the doli le bachari koi. Find me somebody else who will substitute for me in watering the fields. So Rav Huna's day job was watering fields. Later on, by the way, the Gemara mentions in other places in Chas that Rav Huna was extremely rich. So obviously we're talking about here when he was younger at the beginning, when he was very poor and he had to have a job watering fields. So find me somebody to substitute for me, the Edra Mechodina, and I will judge your Din Torah. Which the Rosh points out in one of his Chuvas, what we mean is that we're not talking about that, again, we're not talking about that Rav Huna is saying, I have to go at a certain time to water the field, so find me somebody at that time. That would still be a problem, maybe, if that's not Batola de Muchach, but not right now, taking off time off his work. It means they're coming to him, he's literally in the middle of watering the field, and they say we need a Din Torah. So then he's literally in the middle of the job, like the counter was in the middle of his job, sniffing wine barrels, and then he's entitled to tell them, find me a substitute before I can judge your Din Torah, because right now, I literally have to leave my work right now in order to judge your Din Torah.
But he can't find a substitute for this stuff because that's
he didn't,
a specialty.
Yeah, but he didn't.
He would leave.
Right.
But he has to make up for it.
Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omer Abba Bohu. But so now the Gemara is going to get into a discussion about this whole matter of Shoychad. Come see how blind are people who accept Shoychad. Like this, you think, if a person has a pain in his eye, and he pays money to a doctor, and after all, it's not certain that whatever cure the doctor gives to him is actually going to be effective, maybe, maybe not. The hen noitman shavu pruta. Meanwhile, a person who accepts shoychad, he takes even one pruta or misaminene, and it's definite that he's going to go blind as a result of it. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki shoychad yava pichim. Shoychad will blind the wise. So now, turn it on, we learn it a price. When it says ki shoychad yava eni chachamim, the pasuk says bribery blinds the eyes of the wise. That means kavachomim la tipshin. How much more so it blinds the eyes of the foolish. If even the Chachamim it has such an effect on, how much more so the foolish? And be salaf divrei tzaddikim, the pasuk continues, it's at the beginning of Parashas Shoftim, that the pasuk continues and it perverts the words of tzaddikim, so kal v'chomer l'rashayim. So how much more so it'll pervert the words of rashayim? You might ask, what midi tipshim rashayim b'nei din? And you know, what do you mean tipshim and rashayim don't belong on a base din in the first place? How are they in a position to even accept shoychad? What the Braisa means is, ki ha-shoychad ya'ava enech chachamim, means afilu chacham gadol v'lekeach shoychad, even the greatest chacham, if he accepts shoychad, ein en niftim in ha'olam v'lo samyus ha'lev, but he won't pass away from the world before he develops a blindness of the heart, which means, in other words, that he's going to end up, the Maharsha explains, that it means essentially he's going to end up really thinking that his dinei Torah are genuinely true. In other words, when he first starts accepting shoychad, he's going to realize now, you know what, I know the din is a certain way, but I'm going to do it the other way because I feel a certain affinity towards this guy. Later on, he's going to wind up his thinking, his viewpoint is going to end up getting perverted to the point where he's actually going to think, he's actually going to rationalize to himself that what he's judging really is correct, Abi Torah. And the salif given it tzaddikim, and when the pasuk continues, it perverts the words of tzaddikim, meaning that afilu tzaddik gomer lekeach shoychad, even a great tzaddik, or even a complete tzaddik, if he accepts shoychad, ain't a niftim in the olam, but a tiruf hadas, before he passes away from the world, he'll end up going crazy. So in other words, that's what, when the Braisa says Roshoyim and Tipshim, we don't mean to begin with the guys of Rosha, to begin with the guys of Tipshim. We mean he develops into a Rosha, he develops into a Tipish as a result of taking shoychad. They tell a story in this connection, actually, involving the Oy of Yisrael, the Akhtar Rav. The question is, how do we call the guy a Tzadik Gomer if he's accepting Shoychad? So they tell a story involving the Akhtar Rav, where he was going to be judging a Din Torah, and one of the people secretly goes and slips some money into the pocket of his coat that's hanging on a hook over there or something. So nobody, the Rav has no idea of it at all. But now, when he's sitting down to judge the Din Torah, he feels like this psychological pull towards this guy's side. Like, I feel like I have to stick up for him. And he's wondering, that doesn't say, why do I feel that? And he started checking into it, and eventually he found the money in his coat pocket. So he said, now he understands what's saying the Gemara over here. He didn't even know that he's receiving shaykhad, and yet already it had a certain effect.
What's the purpose of putting money in someone's jacket?
Because eventually he'd put on the jacket and he'd find the money.
Yeah, but he wouldn't know where. You know.
Yeah, fine. But at least the point is, I don't know, the guy figured, whatever the guy figured, but yeah.
Tested him.
Yeah.
Picked up on it.
Yeah. The Gemara continues. Ki osir Rav Dimi Omer. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, "Dorash Rav Nachman bar Koyin." My dichtiv. What does it mean? A pasuk in Mishlei. Melech b'mishpat yamid oretz. A king upholds the world with judgment. The ish trumos yehersena. But a man of trumos destroys the world. So what does that mean? Im doimet dayan lamelech. If a dayan acts like a king. A king doesn't need anything. He's rich. You don't need nobody. He doesn't need to chanfa anybody. He doesn't need to flatter anybody or to suck up to anybody because he's in the highest position. So if a dayan acts like that, yamid oretz, then he will uphold the world because din we have at the end of the first parak of Pirkei Avos. Al shloisha dvarim olam kayim, al din v'al emes v'al shalom. So when he judges truthfully, then he's upholding the world. The im doma l'koyin shemachazer ala granis. On the other hand, if the dayan acts like a koyin who has to wander around from one granary to the other, asking the people for truma. In other words, if the dayan shows that he depends on other people, so therefore he's going to end up having to chan for them. So then yeher sena, then he destroys the world because then he's not going to judge. He's not going to judge truthfully. Because right, so even if it's not outright shaykhad, still the very fact that he's having to rely on other people means that he's going to end up psychologically being biased towards them. Yeah, Tosfos points out, by the way, in a different Gemara, it says that also the same Rav Nachman Rakoyan also Darshan that the dayan has to know the halachas himself. A dayan is not should not be somebody who's constantly having to ask another rav or another dayan for what the din is in a certain case. So Tosfos says you can actually learn both of those from the word v'ishtrumas. It means that he shouldn't be dependent on other people for gashmias. It means that he shouldn't have to be dependent on other people for ruchnias to know the din. So the Gemara says in this connection, Amar Rav Bar Rav Shila, Hai Dayana de Shal Sheilta, if a Dayan regularly borrows things from people in the town, he borrows animals or kalim or whatever, posel or meidandina, then he's posel to judge in that town, because again, we're saying he relies too much on the people. But the Gemara says, V'lo yamoran, ela de lesloy lo shulim. Now that would only apply if this Dayan himself does not have these kinds of things to lend out to other people. Aval Islay La Ushuli, but if the Dayan himself has such things that he lends out to other people, less than both, then there's no problem. That's just, you know, then everybody is doing the same thing, everybody relies on each other equally, and then he's not gonna be yeah. So the Gemara asks, Aini, is that so? Rava Shal Shailta Midvei Bar Merion. Don't we find that Rava used to borrow things from the household of Bar Merion, who was a rich gvir who lived in his town, even though they didn't borrow things from him, and yet Rava was a dayan in his town? The answer is Hosamach Shuvino Hudaboy. That's different. Rava wanted to make people realize that this family of Bar Merion are important. They should realize even the Dayan Rava is borrowing from them. That way people would look up to them. Now, the Mila of that is, Mephoshim say, these people of Bar Merion were Yisoyim. So therefore, he needed to raise their standing in the community, that people should realize these are Yisoyim and you should respect them. So one way of doing that is to show how much even someone like Rava, the Rav and the Rosh Hashiva of the town, relies on them. Okay.
This person is chashuv when you can borrow from them.
Now we're not talking about money. We're talking about, that's why Rashi, you have to realize in Lashon Kodesh, you have two different words for borrowing money versus borrowing things where you're going to return the same thing. Borrowing money is called halva. Borrowing something where you're going to return the same thing, like a behema or kalim, is called she'ela. And here we're using the expression to shel she'elta. So we're not talking about he borrows money. We're talking about, for example, so like this, people would realize, look how important these people of Bar Merion have. They have animals and they have kalim, which Rava needs to borrow from them. So that way, like, it would raise their standing in the community. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Omar Rava, my time of the shukta, what is the reason behind why the Torah asks shaykhad? The reason is, given to Kabbalah Shukta, as soon as a person receives, as soon as a dayan receives shaykhad from somebody, then he automatically feels a psychological closeness to that person. Therefore, that other person becomes like himself. And we know, a person is not going to be able to see something to his own detriment.
So therefore, by the same token, now he's not going to be able to see anything to the detriment that's going to be to the bad of that person that he received shoychad from. That is why the Torah outlaws shoychad. And in fact, he says, my shoychad, shohu chad. Why is that called shoychad? Because shoychad is short for shohu chad. They become one. They become one. The dayan becomes one. He becomes one person one psychologically dayan. Together. He becomes on one side, or more than that, he becomes actually like one person kind of with the, yeah. So that's Maharsha says, the point is, we said before, you can't even accept Shoychad in order to judge truthfully. Why not? The reason is because now you won't be able to judge truthfully anymore. But after all, he says, doesn't the word Shoychad mean that you're accepting it in order to change the din? Not over here, where we're talking about where you're accepting it in order to do the din right. But he's saying, but still, you still become like one person, and then you can't judge him anymore. And here's where you have this thing that we said before from the Chazon Ish, that like it creates a special Yetzirah. That so even though a dayan would be a rov is perfectly allowed to paskin for on a matter of kashrus, let's say in his own house, but over here it's different because it creates a special yetzahari. Okay, the Gemara says Amar Papa. In this connection, loy lidun inish dina lamanda rochim loy, loy lamanda sonim loy. A dayan should not judge din Torah for somebody who he loves or somebody who he hates. Now, Tosfos points out there can be a case where you have people who are really best friends. Those you actually have a pidin, a dayan shouldn't judge those. But here we're talking about they're not quite such best friends, but still they're good friends. Nevertheless, there's still going to be a certain partiality over here. So, l'man derochim le'chozi le'choi. But because somebody who he loves, he's not going to be able to see anything to his detriment. And somebody that the dayan dislikes, he's not going to be able to find, then he's chos for him, and therefore the din Torah is going to come out crooked. So in this connection, Omer Abaya, so Abaya says, you should know, a young Talmud Chacham, if the people in town love him, he shouldn't think that it's because he's such a great guy and therefore everybody loves him. The reason is because he's not giving him a musar in matters like he should. So therefore, the point is Abaya is saying that's not the kind of thing we're talking about where therefore he's considered that they're good friends with him and really possible to judge a din Torah for them. It means they don't love him. They just love the fact that he's leaving them alone and not bothering them and dinim ben adam lamakim. In fact, Abaya himself has this Gemara elsewhere where Abaya points out to Rabba, who was his uncle and his Rebbe, he says, everybody in Pumbedissa hates you. And the reason was because Rabba did tell them off on Mila Dishmaya and they resented him for it. So Omar Rabba, so in this connection, Rabba says, Meresh Haba Amina, I used to think Hani B'nei Mechoza called a Rachmuli. All the people of Mechoza, which is the town where Rabba lived, where he was the Rav and the Rosh Hashiva, I thought everybody loves me. Kivin Davoy Dayana, then when I was appointed a Dayan, Amina, that I said, Minayu Sonuli or Minayu Rachmuli, Mestama, some of them hate me and some of them love me, depending how they fared in Dine Torah, in front of me. But then I saw you end up having the same people come over and over to Dine Torah, and the ones who lose a case today end up winning a case the next day, because every case is different. Amina, so I figured it's not a matter of some people versus other people. Im Mircham, if they love me, Kulu Rachmuli, then Mestama, all of them love me. Imasnu Kulu Sonuli, and if they hate me, then Mestama, all of them hate me. I don't have to start worrying about who loves me and who hates me, because over time, all of them wind up in Dine Torah in front of me, and they're all going to winning or losing, yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, "Tonar abana b'sheichad leisikach." Now, when we say you're not allowed to take sheichad, ain't it sorech loyma sheichad mamin? Needless to say, you're not allowed to take a bribe of money. El after the sheichad dvarim nami aser, you're not even allowed to take a bribe of words. Midloiksev betza leisikach, because after all, if it meant money, then the Torah would use the word betza, which means a monetary gain, like you find by Yehuda by telling to his brothers, "Ma betza ki nagas." Right. So therefore, it means even sheichad of words. So the Gemara says, "Heichi domi sheichad dvarim." What do we mean by sheichad of words? Kihod the Shmuel have a over b'mabra. We have the example that Shmuel one time was crossing a river on a ferry. Asa ahu gavra yohiv layade. A certain person came over and offered Shmuel his hand to help support him. Actually, Rashi says, see, in some places mabra is tied to ferry, but here Rashi translates a gesher, a bridge. So Shmuel was about to go onto a bridge, and this guy helped him. This guy stuck out his arm to offer Shmuel help on crossing onto the bridge. So Shmuel tells him, what brings you to town? Amale dina isli. He says, I have a din Torah. Amale. So Shmuel tells him, pastil nalach ledina, I am possible to judge your din Torah because you did me this little favor. Therefore, now I might be too biased towards you. Whether that's technically correct api alacha, or whether it's just the fnim b'shuras hadin, we shouldn't discuss that point. Maybe as a matter of swicht alacha, Shmuel would be able to judge such a tiny little thing. It's not maybe, but yeah. Another example, Amema have a Yosef a Kadoin Dina. Amema one time was sitting and judging a Din Torah. Porach Gad Fa'areshe, a feather flew and landed on his head. Also, Hu Gavra Shakle, and a certain person came over and took the feather off Amema's head. Omele Maya Vidach, so Amema asked him, what brings you to town? Omele Dina Isli, I said, I have a Din Torah. Omele Pasil Nalach Ladina. Amema also said, I'm possible to judge your Din Torah for the same reason. Another example, Ma'ukva have a shoddy ruka kameh. One time Ma'ukva was walking in the street and there was saliva on the ground in front of him. Also, Ahu Gavra Kasye, a certain person came over and covered it so that Ma'ukva wouldn't have to be disgusted by it. Omale Maya Vidach, Ma'ukva asked him, what brings you to town? Omale Dina Isli, he says, I have a Nintura. Omale Pasil Nalach Ladina, and he says, I'm possible to judge your Nintura. Yet another example, Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi, a more complicated example, Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi have a regular arise, Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi had a regular arrangement with his oris. So an oris, the sharecropper, Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi owned an orchard or a vineyard or something. And instead of working it himself, he hired an oris who would work it and would get a percentage of the produce. So this oris, they have a maisele called Malish Shabsa Kanta de Peri. Every Erev Shabbos, this oris would bring Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi a basket of fruit from the orchard. Yom Echad isolated a hay b'Shabbosa. One time he brought it to him on Thursday instead. Omalei Maishna Ha'idna. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi asked, how come it's different? What happened today that you didn't bring it tomorrow, as you usually do? Omalei, so the guy says, Dina Isli, I have a Din Torah. And the Bote Dinim usually sit on Mondays and Thursdays. So Va'amina. So I figured while I'm here anyway, it's for the Din Torah, I might as well bring it to you, Rebbe. Loi kabo minei, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi did not want to accept it from him because there could be a certain possibility of sheichad in it. And amalei pasil nalach ledina, and further he says, I'm possible to judge your Din Torah. So oisiv zuza derabbanan. So instead, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi set up a pair of Tamar Chachamim because dining lay and they were judging the case. Now, why a pair of Tamar Chachamim? Don't you need three for a Beis Din? So Marsha says one possibility is even though Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi is saying I'm possible to judge your Din Torah, what he means is I'm not going to judge it alone. Now, in principle, a Yochid Mumcha is allowed to judge Din Torah alone. We say in Pirkei Avos he shouldn't anyway, Alti Don Yechidi, but nevertheless, Alpi Alocha he is allowed to. But here he says Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi wasn't going to do it alone because he's concerned that he might be too much in favor of the guy, but he has no problem sitting as a Beis Din of one of a panel of three. So as long as there are two others over there, even if Therefore, even if Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi thinks one way, the other two can outvote him. So therefore, we figure there's no problem with that. With that said, though, other Mefarshim say, I think the Meiri says that maybe we're not talking about that they actually needed a Beis Din of three for this. Maybe it would be the kind of thing where a Yochid Mumcha could judge it. And just he figured, let's have two in order that they can discuss it with each other and come to a clear conclusion. Bahadi to Ka'ozov Ossi, as Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi was walking back and forth and overhearing what was going on in Din Torah, or according to Marsha, he actually himself had heard the case because he's one of the three Dayanim. Anyway, Omar, he starts thinking to himself, you know, he boy turn hochi, this guy, if he thought about it, he could argue such and such, and it would be a very strong claim in Beis Din. And then all of a sudden, he catches himself. Omar, he says, Tipach nafsham from a Kabbalah Sheikhad. People who accept sheichad deserve that their neshama should be blown up. That's a strong lashon. In other words, like such people deserve to be punished very severely. He says, think of it. Uma ani shalai natalti. Madach, you consider my case. I didn't end up accepting what the guy offered me. The im natalti, shali natalti. And even if I did, it's my own. It's fruit from my own orchard. Kach, and nevertheless, I'm still feeling already a certain partiality towards this guy. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, he should argue such and such. People who actually literally receive sheichad, how much more so that they're going to be biased and they can't possibly get around it. And similarly, the Gemara gives another story. Rabbi Shmuel bar Elisha, Isileyahu Gavra Reishas Ageiz. Rabbi Shmuel bar Elisha, who was a Kohen, A man once brought him Reshitha Gaze. We know the Torah tells us in Parshas Shoftim that you have a mitzvah every year when you shear your sheep. You're supposed to give some of the shearings and the wool to the kohen. So this is Rabbi Shmuel Bar Elisha. This is Rabbi Shmuel, one of the Asar Arugim Alphas. So he was a kohen. So this guy brought him Reshitha Gaze. Omalei Mehechaat. So Rabbi Shmuel Bar Elisha asked him, "Where are you from?" Omalei Miduchplan. The guy mentions a certain town. So Rabbi Shmuel asked him, "Mahasim Lahachle, have a kohen lemeisvale? What between there and here, you couldn't find a kohen to give it to? Why are you schlepping all the way here to give it to me?" Omalei. So the guy says, "Dina isli, I have a din Torah, but Amina, and I figured I'm coming to you for the din Torah. Agavur choy isli lemai. While I'm at it, I'll bring it to you, Rebbe." Again, Omalei. Rabbi Shmuel tells him, "Pastil nalach ledina, I'm possible to judge your din Torah. Loi kabel minei, and he didn't want to accept the reishis agaz." Now, here you have another reason why he didn't want to accept it. In the previous case, maybe you could say, you know, he's concerned that it might be shoychad. Here, there's another point as well, Meforshim say. He didn't want to deprive a different kohen of it. The fact is that, like this, the guy should have given it to the first kohen he comes across. Instead, he's schlepping all the way to Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Elisha, to give it to him. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel didn't want to take it in order not to deprive another kohen. So he's telling the guy, effectively, go back home, and when you get back home, you'll find a kohen in town who you can give it to over there. Rather than,
but
then
it's spoiled.
No, wool doesn't spoil that fast. It was wool we're talking about. So Oisiv Le Zugad Rabbanan. So again, he set up a two Tamar Chachamim, but Kadaini Le, and they're judging the guys in Torah. Bahadu Dechazo V'Osi, again, as it be Shmuel Bar Elisha is walking back and forth. Omar, he overhears what's going on. He said, thinks to himself, he boy toin hochi. If he wanted, he could have made such an argument. He could make such an argument. And then all of a sudden he catches himself. Amar tibach nafsham from a kabbalat sheichad. The neshamas of people who receive sheichad deserve to be blown up. Umani shalay natalti madach. I didn't even take what he offered. Vim natalti shalay natalti. And even if I did, I would be in my full rights because it is one of the 24 matnas kahuna. Kach. And nevertheless, I still feel this bias towards him. Mekabbalat sheichad alach is kabbalat. So these are examples, and we're going to continue with more examples in the Gemara tomorrow, and then we're going to continue, then we're going to get back to this topic, then eventually we're going to get back to this topic of people receiving a salary to judge things in halacha. We discussed it briefly so far we established that he's allowed to if either it's a full-time thing like the Dayon Exeris in Yerushalayim, or we have like Kauno or Ravuna where they're actually taking time off work for it. But we're going to continue tomorrow on that topic, and we're going to mention various people who would get a salary from the Trumas Halishka for teaching certain halachas where, again, they were necessary for the tzibur, and therefore they were allowed to. Oh. Yeah.